Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymere Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymere.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymere Church of Christ.
The scripture reading this morning will be from Daniel chapter 6, verses 1 through 5. It's Daniel chapter 6, verses 1 through 5. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give an account to them, and so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God.
In Ephesians chapter 6, we find out what it means to put on the armor of God, and we've been using one of these verses to help us focus on faithfulness in the month of October. If you would, let's say this together. In all circumstances, take up the shield of faith with which you can extinguish all the flaming darts of the evil one. Ephesians 6:16. One of the best-selling books in recent decades has been Stephen Covey's Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And there's a principle that he made popular in that book, and it's very simple and yet very profound. He said, begin with the end in mind. When you're starting out on a journey, when you're starting out in a new vocation, a new occupation, if you've got a new goal, if you're starting a new business, you begin with the end in mind. And all your decisions that you make are made in light of your end goal. That's important, isn't it? To think about where we're going, to think about what's eventually going to happen. Sometimes even decisions that you wouldn't expect will force you to have to think about the future, maybe even the distant future. Not too long ago at our house, we had a new arrival. We call him Leo. He's a leopard gecko that now lives at home with us. We've enjoyed Leo. He's a lot of fun. But one thing we found out, I think maybe on the way to the pet store, maybe it was sooner, I don't know. But the life expectancy of a leopard gecko, I don't know if you realize this, they can live up to 20 years. Which means that 20 years from now, when our kids are out of the house, we may still have Leo upstairs. We're taking care of Leo. You know, you have to think long term about some of these things. Sometimes things might last longer than you think that they would. But that's true for all kinds of decisions. I mean, we have visions of the future. We have visions of how we think the future is going to go. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work out the way we think it will. We say, well, once I just get through this part of my life, once I get through school, when school's done with, then I'll really be able to focus. Once I get the right kind of job, then I'll really be able to do what I've wanted to do. Once our family gets to this point, once we're living in this place, and yet the future often doesn't meet our specifications. In fact, I saw just earlier this month something floating around the internet that defined adulthood. They said the definition of adulthood is just constantly saying, but after this week, things are really slowed down a bit, just over and over again. I thought that's a pretty good definition. That seems like the way that it works. You may have heard of Eric Liddell, a famous runner made famous in the movie Chariots of Fire because of his refusal to participate in the 1924 Olympics in the 100-meter relay because the heat or 100-meter race, because the heat for that race took place on Sunday. And so as he was setting aside that, or the Sabbath, as he would focus on it, he wasn't willing to run on that day. He did run the 400 meters. And he won the 400 meters, which wasn't even his best race. And when he was asked about the secret of his success, he said, well, the secret is I run the first 200 as fast as I can. Then for the second 200 meters, with God's help, I run faster. That was his definition of success, the secret to how he won. It's interesting because sometimes we think towards the end of the race we'd be able to let up a little bit. Maybe if I put in enough work at the beginning, when I get to the end, I'll be able to coast. But that's not what he did. That wasn't his strategy. He ran as hard as he could and then did his best to run harder. We might think of a more recent race that took place in the upper northwest of America between a University of Oregon runner named Tangoy Pepio leading another runner from the University of Washington, Marin Simon, from almost the entire race. I mean, with 100 meters left, it looked like no one was going to be able to overcome the lead that Pepio had built. And so he started to celebrate. He put his arms up in the air, started to slow down a little bit. And in a later interview, Simon was interviewed about what he thought. And he said he saw as his hands went up in the air, he said, it finally dawned on me, I don't think he knows I'm coming. And so he started going as fast as he could. The runner who celebrated early lost the race by a tenth of a second. It's because kind of coasting towards the end, just enjoying the victory. You know, there are times we think when we get to the end of the race, we can just let up. That we've done enough work beforehand, we can just sort of coast to the end. But it doesn't always work out that way. In fact, it's often towards the end of the race where we need the most strength and the most endurance and perseverance. As we think about endurance and perseverance, another name from history that may jump out to you is William Wilberforce. He's mainly noted in connection with the role he played in the abolition of slavery in England. And he stood before Parliament one day. There had been an exploration of the practice of slavery, an 850-page document that had come out. This was his golden opportunity to address Parliament in 1789. He spoke in a long, impassioned speech, and yet the motion to end the slave trade failed. It failed again the next year, and the next year, and the year after that. In fact, this was a yearly practice. There was a little break in there when they were at war, and then he was back to Parliament trying to get this to pass. Finally, in 1807, this is a span of 18 years, that vote was finally passed. But while that stopped the slave trade, it did not free the current slaves. That was his new goal. And he finally passed, Parliament finally passed complete abolition in 1833. He started the process in 1789. In 1833, they passed it, and Wilberforce passed away a few days later. It's interesting how incredible persistence is, how much strength it takes to be constant. And some of us think, well, maybe my biggest victories in life will be at the beginning of life, when we're young and energetic and we've got all these goals. And then when we get towards the end, we don't really have to focus as much. But Wilberforce shows us that persistence can lead to an incredible victory after years and years of working. So what does that mean when we think about the life of faith? If you haven't already, I'd ask you to turn to Daniel chapter 6, because in Daniel chapter 6, we see both of these principles evident. We see evidence that as Daniel here is at an advanced stage in his life, in his faith, he is now going to end up in a place that's familiar to us, but it might be so familiar that we forget the reality of it. If you went to Vacation Bible School, if you went to a Sunday morning Bible class growing up, you probably heard about Daniel and the lion's den. And I think it's good that we're training our children and learning these things. In fact, you might have colored a coloring sheet that looks something like this. I don't know if this is one we've used or not. This is one I found. Here, you know, Daniel's kind of relaxing here among the lions. I think if you're a child in Bible class coloring a coloring sheet about this, I think that's great. I don't think we want to have really graphic pictures of lions, you know, to frighten small children. But here's the challenge. If I think of Daniel in the lion's den and I think of Daniel relaxing here among friendly cartoon lions, I might miss the reality of what's taken place. First of all, this is towards the end of Daniel's life. He's probably in his 80s. Some speculate maybe even close to 90 at about the time these events take place. This is far different than the Daniel we read about in Daniel chapter 1, who shows up as someone that has been exiled from Judah into Babylonian exile. He's an up-and-coming sort of youth that has all of this going for him. Now he's had a long career. And the lions here would not be friendly lions. There are some records in Assyrian history of lions being used for sport, for hunting. And so likely, just like the furnace we talked about last week, was sort of an instrument of convenience. The furnace was there to help build the image. The pit of lions is probably not there for punishment, but for hunting. But it's a convenient punishment to link to what we're going to see. So if I'm looking at Daniel and the lion's den, I'm not just thinking about the cartoon version I might have learned as a child. We want to learn it there, but we also want to mature and develop our understanding. So what Daniel really teaches us is the price of persevering, the cost of long-term faithfulness. What does it take for me to be faithful, even faithful unto death, as the way it be described in Revelation? Faithful to the point it might even cost me my life. Daniel gives us some insight here. And so if you haven't already turned to Daniel chapter 6, I hope you do. We're going to pick up right after the passage that we just read through verse 5. And then if you look beginning in verse 6, then though these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows. King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction. That anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked. Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is, the injunction. Now, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now, in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den? The king replied, the statement is true, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked. Then they answered and spoke before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition 3 times a day. Then, as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king's established may be changed. Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. A stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting. And no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. Then the king arose at dawn, at the break of day, and went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel spoke to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him. And also towards you, O king, I have committed no crime. Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. The king then gave orders, And they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them, their children, and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Powerful passage. That ending is not a part I remember as much from the Bible stories growing up, but it gives us an insight into how serious a situation this was. This is not a simple children's story. It's a story for all of us. What does it mean to finish well? Daniel finishes his life of faith, and he does it well. What is it going to take for you and I to have that sort of faith? That faith that doesn't just run the first 200 meters and coast the last half of the race, but picks up speed. That kind of faith that isn't deterred after year after year. We try something, it doesn't work. We try it again, it might not work, but we know it's the right thing to do. What does it take to finish well? It seems to me that Daniel shows us, if I'm willing to value faithfulness above anything else, that's when I'll be prepared to finish well. The reason athletes can finish well when they prepare for the Olympics is because they value their training and preparation over a lot of other things. Over the sleep they might want to get in the morning when it's time to get up and train. Over the food they might rather eat that would taste better when they've got a special diet for what they're doing. We know that when it's something that's important to us, if we really value it over something else, that's the only way we can achieve success in the field that we want. We've got to value it. When it comes to faith, Daniel valued it over everything else. And just a couple of aspects this morning I want us to think about. He valued faithfulness over personal advancement. This is an internal issue, a personal desire, a personal kind of advancement. At the beginning of Daniel chapter 6, we find out that just like God had been with Daniel under the Babylonian kings, now that you've got this new kingdom that's taken place. Remember, Daniel starts in Judah, taken into Babylonian exile, and then the Babylonians have the Medes and the Persians that sort of end up being lumped together, sort of the Medo-Persian kind of empire. Now they've taken over, and now just as Daniel was advanced in the sight of the Babylonian king, now in front of Darius, he is also rising in the ranks, and Scripture indicates that it's that spirit within Daniel. In other words, it's God helping Daniel, giving him a position that's invaluable among rulers. Darius even considers making him second in command, kind of putting him over everyone else. So Daniel 6 gives us the layout of who's in what position and how many people, nobles, satraps, prefects, all of these technical terms for who had authority over whom. But Daniel could possibly be second in command, kind of similar to the way that Joseph would have been second in command to Pharaoh. A pretty big deal. You can see why some of Daniel's political rivals would have tried to figure out a way that they could bring him down. And is there anything more predictable in human nature than when someone wants power and someone else has it, to try to figure out a way to bring that person down? And I love the statement that they make where they say the only way we're going to find something wrong with this guy is if it has to do with his faith in God. Because when it came to threats to his personal advancement, they couldn't find any. There weren't any skeletons in his closet. Daniel was not a person, if he were alive today, that they would have been able to dig into his background and find an old associate that would say this, an old friend who would say this, an internet browsing history that would say this, an active, you know, report from the police that says this. They couldn't find that for Daniel. The only thing they could do was accuse him in something having to do with his faith. And so they set the trap. They come to the king. And this may sound like a strange request to us, but it would not have been strange if you were a king over a new area that you had just taken in that served different gods than you did. One of the strategies that they might have used, that kings would have used, to sort of calm tensions between different groups is to say, and here it's a 30-day pause in worshiping your gods, and now the king is going to be the one you focus on. It's a way of consolidating power, sort of like the image in Daniel chapter 3. You know, when rulers are in power, they are very concerned about making sure people stay loyal. And so here, instead of worshiping all your own gods, now you go through the king. You want something to happen for 30 days, we go through the king. So it probably sounded like a good idea until he realizes that in a law that couldn't be revoked, now he's got a serious issue. We see something similar in the book of Esther. When Esther goes in before the king, and because of what Haman has done, the king has signed this decree where now the those around will be able to fight the Jews, those who had been in exile, they'd be able to fight them. And so instead of changing that law at the end of the book of Esther, he just has to sign a law that sort of says that the Jews can fight back and they can be warned about that and that sort of thing. These are laws that can't be changed. Even the king feels bound by this because he's stressing out all night over how he could get around it, and he can't find another way. When it comes to personal advancement, Daniel could have chosen to value his position over his faith. Verse 10 tells us he knew that the deed had been signed, but I like what the second half of that verse says. He's in this upper room, and he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day. This was not a statement that Daniel was making to protest the law. This was just something Daniel did. He wasn't trying to make a specific statement about this law. He was just going to faithfully do what he had been doing, faithfully praying to God. It was just an extension of the faith that already really mattered to him. Now, the question I have to ask is, do I value faithfulness over my position that I might have? Here's the difference between Daniel 1 and Daniel 6. In Daniel 1, Daniel is one of the youths that they take from Judah, and they say, okay, we're going to assimilate them and make them one of us. He's got a lot going for him. And then Daniel says, no, I'm going to be faithful. Well, in Daniel chapter 1, he didn't have much to lose, did he? He'd already had to leave his country. They're already making him change his name and learn a different language. And so to be faithful, if they take that away from him, he doesn't have very far to fall. But now he could be second in command. Now he has a career, years of service that rulers look to. He's built something for himself. He's built a life. He's built a reputation. Now he has something to lose. But his actions aren't any different in chapter 6 than they are in chapter 1. He continues to be faithful. Sometimes it's easier to sacrifice for God when I don't have very much to sacrifice. But when God blesses me, when the numbers on my bank account are different than they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago, when my possessions have grown, when my reputation is different, when I've worked hard and feel like I've achieved something, and then that pressure comes to choose my personal advancement, my personal position over faithfulness, then it can be tough, can't it? Because I'm putting something else at stake. I'm putting something else at risk. Daniel didn't have the privilege we do of reading the end of chapter 6. He didn't know how this was going to end. But he decided no matter what, he was going to value his faithfulness over his position. Are there times when I might be tempted just to kind of go with the flow because I really don't want to lose what I built up? I really don't want to lose what I have. In fact, think of all the good Daniel could have done with this great position. And so it would have been easy for him to say, you know, just for 30 days, it's not very long, it's not forever. I mean, I've been faithful in so many other ways. That's got to count for something. And I'll just sort of slide through and then think of what I'll be able to do when I'm second in command. Boy, that's when I can really start doing it. So I'll just sort of let this slide, but once he puts me in charge, then I'll really be able to do what needs to be done. He valued faithfulness beyond that. That's one internal challenge. An external challenge is he valued faithfulness over any kind of external pressure that would be put on him. Now we can imagine, not only do you have pressure from the law here, this pressure that was so paramount, even the king is struggling with it. The king, the one who's supposed to be able to find a way out of things, feels trapped by this law, but Daniel doesn't feel trapped by him. Now, you might think that Daniel could have maybe even expected something like this. Maybe he did. He'd been around long enough. He'd seen what political rivals could do. And yet he wasn't willing to let this external pressure overtake him. And as we look through Scripture, all of God's people have struggled over the years with that sort of challenge. We began this morning by reading from Psalm 57. It ends, as many of the Psalms do, on an upbeat note of worship. But I want us to look a little bit earlier in the Psalm to see what the psalmist is struggling with. Here's what we read in verse 4. My soul is among lions. I must lie among those who breathe forth fire. Even the sons of men whose teeth are spears and arrows, and their tongue a sharp reward. Isn't it interesting that even the psalmist would describe being among enemies as like being among lions? Sometimes it feels that way. Now again, our pressures are more subtle. We certainly don't have laws that are threatening us with being thrown in a den of hungry lions. And yet, there's still pressure. There's still pressure around us. And I understand that we need to be as wise as possible. And Daniel certainly understood what Ezekiel said that we talked about last week, that you needed to be working for the good of the country in which you're exiled, that you pray for the king. But how do I respond when those little pressures start to collect? And all of a sudden, I'm so worried about what someone else would think that maybe I'm not as willing to say what I really believe. I'm so worried about how this might be perceived by the people around me that I'm not as willing to stand up for what I know is right. I'm so worried about what might happen to my reputation if someone were to notice that online, on social media, that I was involved in this certain event, this certain church event, that I'm part of a group that's getting together and studying God's Word. If I have that discussion and I have other friends on there, that they won't respond to that, and what will they say when they see this? And we start going through all these scenarios in our mind, and the external pressures seem to take over. Do I value faithfulness more than any kind of external pressure that faces me in my life? Now, it's easy to sit in an auditorium and say, I know the right answer to this question. The answer is yes. It's much more challenging when I'm facing real-life realities. When Daniel is thinking about a lion's den from which he has no possible guarantee of escape, he has that same kind of even-if faith we talked about last week. Even if that's where he ends up, he's willing to do it. Yet, of course, God makes a way where he didn't see a way and where we wouldn't have seen a way. You know, it's interesting to think about the way certain expressions come into use. Years ago, Spain possessed the territory on both sides of the Straits of Gibraltar. And there were rock outcroppings on either side that were called the Pillar of Hercules. That's what they referred to those. And that was seen as the gateway. They didn't think there was anything else beyond that. And so coins that they printed at the time had a phrase that meant no more beyond. That was it. Until the discovery of the New World. Until they realized there was more to their maps than they had previously known. And then that phrase was changed. The no was taken out. Now it was more beyond. There are times I look at a circumstance and there's so much pressure on me that I think, you know, unless I change the way that I live, and unless I back off here, there's no more beyond. There's no hope. There's a den of lions. There's a fiery furnace. That's going to be the end of it. There's no more beyond that. But with God, there's always more beyond. Beyond what I can see, beyond what I can imagine. Daniel 6 isn't a promise that I'm going to be delivered from every lion's den that I find myself in. Just like Daniel 3 isn't a promise that we're always going to get to avoid what happens in a fiery furnace. But it is a promise there will always be more beyond it. That's not the end of the story. Because even when we face risks and challenges that take our lives on earth, if I serve God, there's more beyond. I want to finish well. I want to value faithfulness over everything. And if I do that, there'll be more beyond. So how am I doing in the race? Am I prepared to finish well? Am I prepared to keep from coasting and to keep working at whatever capacity I can, however I can, to accomplish as much as I can for the Lord? We've talked about what it meant to be in a den of lions. Another psalm, this is the last place we'll look this morning, 22nd psalm, gives us a glimpse into what would happen with the crucifixion. On the cross, Jesus quotes the first verse of the 22nd psalm, my God, why have you forsaken me? It's interesting to hear the description of enemies in Psalm 22. Many bulls have surrounded me. Strong bulls of Bashan have encircled me. They open wide their mouth at me as a ravening and roaring lion. Daniel did wind up in a den of lions. God delivered him. But one that was even more innocent than Daniel, because Jesus lived a sinless life, was thrown into a den of lions, enemies that surrounded him. Because of God's love for us, instead of delivering Jesus from that death, Jesus chose, "Not my will, but thine be done." Jesus was crucified, rose from the dead. That gives us deliverance. That gives us the guarantee of more beyond. It gives us hope. We can finish well. Because the finishing line for the Christian isn't here on earth, and it's not death. That's just the doorway into another realm of existence. Our finishing line winds up in a place greater than we can imagine. If you want to finish well this morning, it begins by starting right. It begins by putting Christ on in baptism and beginning a life of service to God. It may be that somewhere along the way you've lost the way and you want to value faithfulness above all. If you'd like to pray with a couple of our elders right after this worship service, if you go out that doorway, they would love to sit down and to talk with you, or we'd love to pray for you. Let's leave here determined to finish well. We can help you. Let us know as we stand and as we sing together.